There's like an energetic answer, which is about getting out of your comfort zone and doing it before you're ready. And then there's a practical one about, you know, being clear what it is that you're trying to accomplish so that when opportunities come up, you have a filter that you can apply that says, you know, is this forwarding the things that I said were important to my strategic objectives for the next 12 months?
Welcome to the Women Choosing Growth podcast, where we bring you practical advice and guidance on how to grow your business and achieve success in your entrepreneurial journey. We feature inspiring stories of success, challenges of growth, and lessons learned from women entrepreneurs, industry experts, and thought leaders who have been through the growing pains inevitable as an entrepreneur. Whether you are just getting started or are looking to scale up your business, our show is designed to provide you with the tools, resources, and community you need to grow your business. Join your host, Tina, a lifelong entrepreneur and business growth advisor, as we explore topics such as marketing, sales, finance, leadership, and personal growth, all tailored specifically to the needs of women entrepreneurs. So if you're ready to grow your business faster and smarter and learn from the experiences of those who have traveled the growth path before you, then this podcast is for you. Thanks for tuning in and let's get started.
Welcome back to the show, ladies. Our guest today is Jen Cochran, co-founder and CEO at Gifted Travel Network. She has one of the most unique backgrounds of any executive of a modern travel agency. You see, Jen was an executive with the Federal Reserve, where she was a startup and turnaround specialist tasked with tackling some of the Fed's most complex business challenges. Every couple years, she was tasked with new projects to fix the Feds. So she left the world of financial fixes of the Feds and co-founded a much more interesting company, the Gifted Travel Network. Jen steered the company through startup and through many growth phases so far, all with a vision for creating a unique business in a mature industry. Her work has led GTN to being recognized throughout the industry for its innovative approach to supporting, educating, grooming successful travel entrepreneurs. Her expertise is not just for travel professionals. Her extensive business background, solving so many challenges and helping so many entrepreneurs go from startup to gurus, that she shares her expertise with us today on how to plan for growth, when to invest, and how to really plan for your growth of your business through investing, and also when not to invest. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Jen, I am excited to dive into one of my favorite topics on financially being savvy, when to invest, when to hold back from investing, and all the good number stuff. But before we dive into that, I really, really want to hear and share your story about how you became this expert in the travel world. But you came from, in your past, you were an executive at the Federal Reserve, helping companies tackle some of the most complex business challenges. So I want to hear a little bit about that journey and how you, what you did there, and then how that really transitioned you into this travel expert that you are.
Well, I love my career at the Federal Reserve, and really I was almost sort of like an internal startup turnaround person, because whatever the crisis was or the thing that was blowing up or the new thing or whatever like the big thing was that was happening that needed attention, I would like go in, I would figure it out, I would set the strategy, I would hire the people, I would build it or fix it or whatever it was. And that would typically take about 2 years, and then I'd be on to the next thing. And I like that. I like variety. Like, I feel like I'm a really strong generalist, and I like to be always switching gears and learning new subject matter. So it was a really great career for me, but I got to the point where I was, you know, a senior executive. It was a very big job. There was always a crisis, right, in the financial markets.
Yes.
Or in banking, or in, you know, there was always something. So I was pulled away a lot, and I decided after I was with the New York Federal Reserve for most of my career, and then I moved down to Charlotte to start up a division down here. And after I did that, I kind of felt like I was ready to hang up my suit. And that was my first foray into entrepreneurial businesses. And so I actually started a community-based business with a friend of mine, and we had a TV show, and we had a website that had like a calendar of all the things that were going on in the community. And we had all the local businesses so we could support them. It was at a time when a lot of businesses didn't have their own SEO and websites and stuff. So we aggregated them onto a site, and So about little more than two years after we built that, she was relocating. So we sold that business. And then my business partner actually had a travel business and had started a coaching and education company to teach people who have travel businesses to run successful, lucrative businesses. Because there are a lot of people who are sort of dabbling in it and honestly not making any money at all. And so
she
came from a Wall Street background. She's like, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so she went out and she looked at all the different, you know, gurus in marketing and email marketing. And she implemented that in her business and then felt a calling to sort of teach people that. So as I was selling my business and she was starting up this business, I was like, that's actually kind of cool. She needed some help. I started helping her. And then we ended up together with another person building the current company, which is a travel host agency. So I actually don't have any expertise in travel, but my clients are travel agencies. And what my expertise in really is strategy, starting things, building a team, you know, helping to create a high performance environment. That's what my, so that doesn't matter what the underlying, now travel's a much better underlying subject matter than monetary policy and banking. You know, it's obviously a lot more fun.
More exciting.
But the principles of business apply no matter what the underlying subject matter is. So besides running the business on a day-to-day basis, because I'm the CEO of the business, I'm also still doing business coaching for our top producers to help them build successful businesses.
Yes. So I imagine that all of that fixing that you did was really what gave you the bones to be able to really help elevate these people that you're working with now, regardless of the industry.
That, and also I feel like the pandemic obviously was very, very hard on the travel industry. We did exceptionally well during that period. And I think part of the time was because I came from a background of being in crisis, like frequently. And so I didn't get freaked out by it. And we actually really leaned into it and helped, you know, our agency owners like step back, refresh their branding, fix their client care systems, you know, really be ready for the surge in demand that when it came after the pandemic. We have a very strong community. So we helped people have the support systems that they need during that period. And as a result, our growth coming out of it was light years ahead of the rest of the industry.
That's awesome. And I relate to that because I also, in hindsight, right after being a couple decades of entrepreneurship, I realized it wasn't, and I kind of knew this at the time, but my passion wasn't in the business that I started originally. It was really in this, like, I need a challenge. Yeah. I need something. And it seems like every 2 years, coincides with what you said. It's like every 2 years, I'm like, ugh, okay, I got that figured out. I need something new to like push me and stretch me. So I completely relate to the project, fix it, build it mindset. Yeah. I love it.
And it helps me be, like I said, a really strong generalist because, you know, as at the Federal Reserve, I did all kinds of things. I ran an analytical unit. I supervised JP Morgan Chase. I created the bank's operational risk management process. I ran the investment review process. I was the contingency officer. I mean, like totally varied things. So I learned about technology and and when you start your own business, as you know, I mean, now we've got a big team and a lot of support. But at the beginning, like it was like a couple of us working out of a bedroom in my house. And I was IT and HR and legal and, you know, all the things as it is when you start
all the things every day. Right. Exactly. Wearing all the hats at all the time. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Entrepreneurship 101 right there. Awesome. Well, I love that story, and I'm glad that you are in a fun industry now. So let's talk about one of the things that I know you brought to us and wanted to share on this financial question that we get a lot. I'm sure you get a lot. That's probably why it's one of your favorites. When do businesses know when to spend money, when to invest, when to hold back on spending? Like how when somebody comes to you with that answer, What? How do you answer that?
And it's a really broad question. So it's kind of sending me in two directions. The first is when should you be investing? It's usually way before you're comfortable doing it. Like that's my general answer. It's like people really need to be pushed out of their comfort zone because if you want to keep growing, you have to hire ahead of growth. You need to create the capacity in order to allow for the growth. And I think that, you know, people get scared because they're worried about the cash flow implications of making those investments. And by doing that, they create capacity constraints in their business and they stay stuck. You know, Yep. On the flip side, I think that there's also, and it happens all the time in the travel industry, there's like, you know, the shiny object syndrome, you know, because I mean, it's travel. Oh, I'm going to go to Africa and I'm going to do, you know, all these things so I can learn about the destination. It's not always a good investment, right? And so having a strategic framework where you're very clear about the path that you want to take and you've mapped out, what are you investing this year in terms of branding, marketing, and building your operations and building your team and, you know, mapping all of that out very quickly and obviously having a good budget and projections and all the financial, you know, doing some financial modeling around your business helps. So there's like an energetic answer, which is about getting out of your comfort zone and doing it before you're ready. And then there's a practical one about, you know, being clear what it is that you're trying to accomplish so that when opportunities come up, you have a filter that you can apply that says, you know, is this forwarding the things that I said were important to my strategic objectives for the next 12 months?
Yes. Yes. I love that. I will preach that all day long to the mountaintops. Yeah. What I hear you saying is, for one, you have to have a plan, right? This is not where it's like, oh, I want to grow, so I should invest because Jen said I can do that when I'm uncomfortable. Like we don't invest until we have a plan.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
And I know that, you know, one of the things that people look at, which is, I mean, you know, it's good, you know, but it's a good thing. We literally all learned, you know, I learned about it when I was getting my MBA is like, you know, how you look at ROI and, you know, it can be very systematic. But the thing is that actually a lot of times investment, especially if it's in marketing and other things, it's not a linear return. So sometimes it's a little bit of a leap of faith too, because you don't know, there's not going to be a direct ROI necessarily in the things that you invest in for the growth of your business, especially when it's building infrastructure, but you still have to do it to have the capacity to grow.
So how would someone who's thinking about, you know, everyone who's listening is in growth mode, they're wanting to take their business to the next level. That usually does mean investing in something along the way, like almost every year, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It could be people, it could be physical technology. Things like vehicles or products, technology. Right. How does someone start this, you know, when they're looking at this year, looking at next year, looking at the big picture, because some of those things are intangible. I've heard that a lot, like, oh, I put all this money in marketing. Well, really, it was branding. You're not going to necessarily get a phone call with a new sale on Tuesday because you did a branding message last month, right? So how does someone start this process of really getting clear on their plan, what it's going to cost, and what their return would be?
You know, I think it's really important to take a top-down approach and always go back and actually anchor in on the vision, because when you dive right in and you can kind of lose the forest through the trees sometimes when you get on all the analytical on things and you forget why you're doing it in the first place. So before you get to, because I'm going to talk about, like, you know, you need to budget and do some scenario analysis and stuff. But before you do all that, I always say, go back and start with the big picture. And make sure that you're really clear, and it helps to rearticulate what's your vision. You know, what exactly does your business look like in the ideal state? You know, who is your ideal client? Be very, very clear on your ideal client. Who are they? Where do they hang out? What do they like? All of that kind of stuff. And then work your way down through to say, is my messaging consistent with that? Is my branding consistent with that? What am I doing to build my list? What am I doing for engagement strategies on the marketing side? Some of those things may need investment. So start to create some priorities there. And then on the operational side, what do I need to do to fix my systems? What do I need to do to hire to build capacity? What do I, you know, whatever, or invest in product or whatever those things are, create a plan for that. And then I actually say, then you want to sort of do the financial piece last, once you've mapped that out very clearly, how the whole picture fits together. And if you start with creating a budget where you run your expenses based on what your current run rate is, you know, and then you go back and you say, here are the things I want to do. What do I expect to need to spend in order to accomplish those things? And you build out a budget. That's going to give you a revenue goal, obviously, because you want to have all of those things plus your salary liability. You want to make more than that, ideally. And then do some scenario analysis on the revenue side to say, okay, well, what does that mean if I increase my sales by X percent, if I bring in X number of new clients, if I, you know, whatever it is, and model that. It's never going to show up exactly how you model it in my experience, but order magnitude wise, it usually does. And it opens up the possibilities and it helps you see that that revenue goal that you have created for yourself because of your run rate of expenses and the investments that you want to make in your business is achievable based on whatever that scenario looks like. And if to cover that, you know, it's so far aggressive off your base case revenue scenario, then clearly you might need to push some things into a future year. Or go out and get a loan or an investor or something if you feel like it's necessary to do it to take your business to the next level. So I feel like there's a practical sort of order of magnitude, revenue, expenses. And then of course, as a responsible business owner, you also need to look at the cash flow. So if you push those things out across the calendar and make sure that you are reserving for expenses in a later year, if you bring in a lot of your cash at the beginning of the year because you're running programs that people invest in the beginning of the year or something like that. It's about being deliberate and systematic, recognizing that you don't have a crystal ball. So it's never going to happen exactly the way you put it down on paper, but putting it down on paper usually makes it happen in some way.
Oh, I love that statement. I have said that so many times. It's call it manifestation, call it whatever you want.
But yeah, exactly.
Putting goals down on paper, do some magical stuff.
Yeah,
absolutely. Couple great things that you said there that I want to go back to on that. So first of all, for the non-financial people, which there's a lot of entrepreneurs that just cringed thinking about budgets and numbers. But I want to really focus on the first part, which I 100% agree is the most important part, is really getting clear on that vision. What is the goal of the mm-hmm. business? What does it look like? I love to hear your feedback on this, but I always say, like, have the big audacious goal, if that's 10 or 20 years. Work it back, because when you're doing this analysis of like this investment or this growth strategy that you want, you might be overshooting the 5-year plan and looking at something shiny for which is actually in your 10-year plan, or vice versa. You might be looking at it's 3 years out. Mm-hmm. Why are you investing in this? Because there's something else that you should have invested in to get to that next piece. So the very first step that you're saying, and I agree 100%, is getting really clear of what the big runway is and what are the steps to get that big, hairy, audacious goal. So it's not necessarily financial. There's financial numbers in there, but that's the fun part, I feel, is the vision, the planning, what the dreaming of what your business can look like, and then breaking that down, making sure you're doing the right steps to get to that big vision. And then when it comes to the financials, it is not just, you know, a lot of people, being a financial lover that I am, financial, not accounting.
Yeah, me too. Can't stand accounting.
Exactly. And if we could just have a whole episode on the difference between that, between you and I, because what we're talking about, what you and I are talking about here, is the financial modeling. That is actually fun when you take the word financial out of your head, because it's not the debits and credits in your QuickBooks necessarily. Right. It is really about modeling out what could this look like that now just ties to that vision. Are you an accomplished woman business owner with a story to tell? Do you crave a platform where you can share your journey, the good, the bad, and the ugly? Hey everyone, it's Tina here. If you're fans of the show, then you know we are a show that celebrates the strengths and resilience of women entrepreneurs just like you. As we're getting this podcasting community going, I thought it would be fitting to extend an invitation to apply to join me as a guest on our Top 100 podcast platform. I started Women Choosing Growth because I believe that real growth happens when we come together and share our expertise and our experiences. We want to hear your inspiring stories, the challenges you face, and the lessons you've learned on your entrepreneur journey. Whether you've triumphed over adversity or faced setbacks head on, your story has the power to inspire and empower other women just like you. This platform is for you to showcase your achievements, highlight your expertise, and create meaningful connections within our community. So if you're a fearless woman business owner, unafraid to open up about your path to success, we want you on our show. Go to www.womenchoosinggrowth.com and join our community. From there, you'll be given the chance to fill out the short application. If you believe that you have a story to share, then why not? Once again, it's www.womenchoosinggrowth.com.
I can't wait to feature more amazing and talented women in this community. Now, back to the show.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. Yeah. And it really opens up the possibilities. And I find when I'm working with business owners and they're struggling, especially, you know, early on, when they're at the beginning of building a team and they're afraid of making those investments. And I'm like, well, let's just look, you know, if you increase your average transaction size by this much, or your yield by this much, or your sales by this much, look what it does. You know, you only have to do this. And this is what happens to your revenue. You have no trouble affording this. Whereas if you don't make that investment, you don't have the capacity to increase your clientele. And so you can't get to this next level. I feel like, you know, growth's not linear. It's like a step function, right? Like you have a growth spurt, then you have this capacity constraint, and you're going to stay stuck there if you don't do what you need to do to push through. And the sooner you can recognize that it's coming so that you can hire ahead and invest ahead, the shorter you can make those little limits, capacity limits.
The little jumps, yeah. The little steps. Yeah. Yep. Exactly. And I think you hit the nail on the head again of a lot of things that we see with clients that we work with as well, that they look at that number of like, oh, well, if I have to hire, say, 2 salespeople, mm-hmm. it's going to cost me $200,000, mm-hmm. just throwing out a number. I don't have that. But it's like, okay, there's a runway where they need to get up to speed on your products or services. Right. But like that, those 2 sales reps could bring in $1 million.
Exactly.
Yeah. In revenue in a year's right. time. So like, are you willing to spend, you know, $20 for, yeah. you know, for the return? So that's where that modeling and that financial planning really makes the magic happen.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you. And sometimes you do have to do things in a step phase. Like, you know, ultimately you want to, like, let's say build your own proprietary system for something, but in the meantime, there's third-party things that can get you through. You know, that's a 10-year strategy to build your own system, for example. Or, you know, there might be something that you're outsourcing currently, outsourcing your IT or outsourcing your HR or outsourcing because you know, some sort of fractional solution works in the near term. But that's not the long-term plan. But that's also not the next year plan. Maybe that's 5 years down the road.
Mm-hmm. And I know for driven women who want that big picture, right? If they have that vision, it's really hard to say like, I can't do that just yet. I can't, you know, take my business globally or whatever it is. Like, I have to do these little steps. So very much acknowledge that that is easier said than done.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know I'm like that too. Yeah. I want the 10-year plan to be tomorrow, you know, but it doesn't work that way. It's a 10-year plan for a reason.
Yeah. It's all easier said than done. On the other hand, it's really just about believing what's possible. And I like to, you know, what you're saying about manifesting things, because I feel like you could have 2 people who are equally intelligent, who have equally good business plans, and one person ends up doing much better than the other person. And the difference really comes down to the mindset and their ability to take risks and to move things forward and to, you know, not get, you know, paralyzed because they don't have every single thing, every single T crossed and every single I dotted, or they're not, you know, they're afraid to make that next step. It's so important mm-hmm. to, as entrepreneurs, like, it takes a fair amount of guts. And also, like, I think a strong amount of positivity.
Yes, because you are going to make mistakes, especially mm-hmm. the more risks you take, mm-hmm. the more things you'd be like, well, learn from that, as long as you didn't, you know, take too long to learn that mistake.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you don't make any mistakes, that probably means that you're not thinking big enough or pushing fast enough.
100%. Just said that. Mm-hmm. Yep. Just said that recently. I say that quite often. Mm-hmm. So, and then I think most people, a good majority, not all, some business owners got into business more of an accident. They were really good at something. Yeah. And then, like, turns out a lot of people wanted that something and they became business owners. So for those people, like, you know, that's probably a little more out of their comfort zone. Mm-hmm. The others, like yourself and myself, just jumped out of an airplane and figured it out on the way down
exactly.
and still figured it out. Yep. Yeah. Lots of risk, which is also funny. On a side note, I am a risk taker in business, but this girl does not like adrenaline in life. Like, I don't do sports that, like, raise my adrenaline.
That's so funny.
I'm not risky in all aspects in life, just somehow, some reason in business completely.
Well, I'm not particularly interested in jumping out of a plane, but I am fairly adventurous. I travel all over and I, you know, will do all kinds of things. I scuba dive and I've, you know, kayaked in Antarctica and hiked sand dunes in Namibia and those kinds of things.
Those things I can do as long as it's not falling.
Yeah.
It's the like skiing or jumping out of airplane, bungee jumping. None of those things are on my list. I mean, I still need to be in control with the creative things.
I did zip line at Victoria Falls. That was pretty cool, going over the gorge. But yeah, I like to be attached to a harness or a parachute at least or something.
Yeah. Exactly. So you don't have to be risky in all the things. Right. Just take a little risk in business in order for that to grow. And you know, one of the questions I was going to ask you, which I think we're kind of talking about here, is why it is so important to invest in specifically in things that are a little less tangible. It's not a person. It's not a new truck to go do deliveries. Mm-hmm. It's more of this technology thing. You hit on it a little bit, but technology is, you don't necessarily see the ROI right away. So tell me a little bit more about how you would handle that, someone thinking about tech investments.
I mean, there's different kinds of tech, right? Because there's client-facing tech. If you're providing a service, it's technology that ultimately can support whatever service it is that you're providing. Then there's internal tech, like QuickBooks that you talked about, you know, for books and records or what have you. So it's important for efficiency, and it's also important for competitiveness, because the world is moving really quickly. And it's really important for risk management and compliance as well. Anytime you're dealing with clients, you're dealing with credit card data, you're dealing with personal information, you're dealing with, you know, in the travel industry, you know, people are planning bucket list trips. They cannot afford to screw something up, not to mention the fact that they've got to have credit card authorizations. They've got to have terms and conditions. They've got to have really good systems to not make mistakes. The whole, you know, if there are people who are still operating by putting things in a file and putting it on their desk, like that just isn't going to work in today's environment anymore. So it's a necessity, I feel like, to run a well-run business, to manage your risk, to be efficient, to stay competitive. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to be the first in with a new technology. Like sometimes I like to let it play out a little bit, especially if there's a few new ones coming to market at the same time, kind of see which one's going to win over the industry. And you don't always have to be first to market with it, but you also don't want to get too far behind, because it'll definitely hurt.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, again, to reiterate, put an exclamation on what you said, like there's a risk if you're too far behind technology, mm-hmm. of being sued, something, you know, something gets hacked. We just saw something in our system of like a really creative email of mm-hmm. like the hackers are getting so much better.
Yeah,
it used to be obvious. It's not as obvious. Very sophisticated.
And fraud. Absolutely. Also just general fraud, people calling and pretending they're somebody that they're not. I mean, you need to sometimes do face-to-face to screen people, do background checks, you know, all that kind of stuff as well. And technology can help with catching some of that. At the same time, we need a human element as well to know that something doesn't quite look right.
Yes, agreed. And one other thing too is technology, depending, like you said, if it's something that you do want to develop, something more proprietary that adds to the value of your mm-hmm. business when you do go to sell. However, it's really expensive to create your own tech
very,
as well.
Very.
Especially looking at apps or systems within, yeah. It can pay off. But again, that's usually a long-term playoff if it's just something for you that will sell with your business in the future. Mm-hmm. So that's one of those modeling things where
yeah.
you really need to know what it's going to do in the meantime until you can get that from a sale.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it depends on the industry you're in and everything. We don't have any proprietary technology, and I don't plan on building any proprietary technology. But it's been a bit frustrating because this industry was way behind technologically. And so finally, there's some really sharp things coming to market. And again, we're kind of looking to see, you know, which ones we're backing. And we did make a big mm-hmm. technology transition just a few months ago for one of our major processes. But technology, I think, is the next expensive thing after human capital in most businesses.
Yeah. Oh, I would say absolutely. We have a lot of clients through Cultivate that are in the travel agent in the travel world. So I don't know if you want to share that technology that you just switched to, or if that's still secret.
Well, it's not a secret. It's called Sion, S-I-O-N, and it's actually just for our commission tracking, reconciliation, processing. So our members use it, our clients use it, and they enter all their bookings in there, and then that's what we can tell where everything is, and that's how we can manage when payments come in to apply the payments to those. And it's just the old industry standard was a database system that had been around for decades and decades and decades and hadn't been updated in decades. And it was very, very clunky and not very user-friendly. And so this is like a light year departure in terms of technology. But in order for that system to work, it also needed to integrate with other things in the industry. And so it still can't do everything that we need it to do, but it can do enough that we were able to move to it at this point and retire a lot of the clunky technology. So it made a huge difference, but it was a significant expense. I think it was like 8 times the price of our previous technology. And also any technology transition, especially when you're moving a ton of data from one system to another system, is not fun, takes a lot of planning, some very meticulous work.
Yes. Oh, that's the part that, you know, we always say that, oh, if technology wasn't in our life, it'd be easier, but it certainly would not be the same. We definitely need technology. Yeah. So we're just embracing it. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, when we think about growth, these women who are listening and in growth mode, I think we've shared a lot about, you know, having that really clear vision and then modeling it out. So not the, you know, profit and loss kind of finance, but the fun stuff like you and I like. Is there anything else that you would want to share of like must do's to really be clear on what you're investing in and or when you're not investing?
I mean, most businesses' largest investment is in human capital. And I think it's really important that we spend a lot of time putting in good disciplines for how we're hiring and building our teams as well. And so we do a lot actually to make sure we're taking time to do team building and fun activities with the team. And we do strategic planning sessions with the team every quarter where we talk about everything that's going on in the company. And big, you know, we share the trends of, you know, all that kind of stuff so that people feel connected with what they're doing. But the other thing is that you need a strong complement of people, you know, that are all different. And so helping them understand different people's work styles. Now we all collaborate and work together, and the importance of having people who are wired differently is really good, but it's also important in the hiring phase. And I mean, I, you know, have hired a lot of people in my life, you know, both at the Federal Reserve and, you know, and I thought that I was doing a really good job with a lot of traditional ways of hiring using performance-based interviewing and things like that. But recently, like I'd say like the last year and a half, we've instituted doing, we use something called Predictive Index, which is a work style sort of assessment tool.
Love it.
Of creating a profile for the job description that we're putting out, the job posting, and matching candidates to that before we even consider the interview process. And it's really made a difference because, you know, those of us who were early on working in the company, we tended to be sort of upper quadrant people, and we were not hiring enough process people. And also as entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. you know, doing policies and procedures and systematizing things, not typically the strongest wheelhouse, you know, for those of us who are running companies like that. So we found that our team was a little bit lopsided, and we needed to do a much better job bringing in people who were really strong in the lower two quadrants. And so it made a huge difference for us in bringing in the right people and complementing the team. So, you know, I mean, that's the most expensive thing you're going to do probably is hire people. So investing in things and disciplines as well as actual tools that help you do that well, I think is really important.
Yes, I do love Predictive Index, and Acumax is also almost like that. One other resource that we can put in the show notes as well is The Working Genius. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you have experience with, have you done Working Genius? It's kind of the same thing. Yeah. To get any project, basically The Working Genius is to get any project across the line or initiative moving forward, you need all 6 types. And we've done that with all of our brands. We've done that with clients to make sure that, like, otherwise, if you have, like you said, all of the creative and the problem solvers on the project, but there's no implementers who's going to actually make sure that that gets done, like projects just sit and they never seem to ever get
right,
finished.
Right, exactly.
So we use that as well. So there's a couple of those great tools out there.
Yeah, for sure.
Because your team is one of the most expensive things.
Yeah, for and really the most important, yeah. because it's not just about success. So when we talk to our agency owners about like how we define success, we talk about success as freedom, fulfillment, and financial satisfaction. If you have those three things, then that's success, which, and those three things are subjective. But just having profitability, I don't see as success, right? Because if you're miserable, or you're, you know, stuck in a hamster wheel, or you're wearing yourself down, or, you know, everybody's snapping at each other, or you're just not having fun. If you're resenting your clients, then that means that there's something wrong with the business model, right?
Agreed. Agreed. 100%. It's all equally important.
Yeah.
Happy clients, happy team, and profitability.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. So I know you work a lot with the travel industry. For those who are listening, how would they, if they're like, I really need some help with this, how would they, who's best to reach out to you, and how would they reach out to you?
Our website is www.giftedtravelnetwork.com, and we're a B2B business, so our entire website's B2B. So that's probably the best way to find out about what we do and our programs and stuff. But all of our coaching and education that we do is all for people who are hosted with us. So it's for people who are building travel agencies, essentially, or own travel agencies and need the support.
Yep. Okay. So anyone who has travel agencies, they should be part of your network.
They should.
And then can
we have, they should. We have a really, really great complement of businesses.
Perfect. Any last words for our listeners?
No, it's fun. I mean, I think that's the most important thing is like, let's remember it's fun. I mean, in my days at the Federal Reserve, I like never even imagined that this existed, this opportunity that I have now. And now I feel like I have the best job that I never knew existed. So we're so lucky that we get to do what we want to do by design because we've created our own companies. And there are days or week sometimes where, you know, things are not going as planned or, you know, some unexpected something blows up and we got to deal with it because nobody else is going to do it, right? Ultimately, the buck stops with that. But also, it's like the best thing in the world to create something from nothing. And just, you know, like I love when I pull into the parking lot here in the office and I see the whole parking lot, you know, filled with the team's cars, and I come in and everybody's working and our office is really pretty and it's nice space and it's just a great environment. And I'm like, all these people, you know, are employed and engaged and happy because we created this business. And that just to me is an amazing feeling.
Yes. Yes. I love it. Awesome. Well, I super appreciate having you on today and sharing all of the expertise and speaking my love language of having that vision and the financials all dialed in as well.
Yeah,
so thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please be sure to hit subscribe on your favorite podcast platform so you never miss an episode. The Woman Choosing Growth Show is not just another podcast. It's a tribe of women helping each other grow. So please share this podcast with all the women entrepreneurs that you would love to see succeed. If you'd like to know more about customized business advising through Cultivate Advisors, download business tools, or sign up for upcoming events, visit www.womenchoosinggrowth.com. Once again, that's www.womenchoosinggrowth.com. Remember, we are in this together. See you on the next one.